Max Hall and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fyfe from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Hey friends, it's MJ from the Coaches Panel. I hope you're well and welcome back to our first Supercoach Strategy episode, where we look through everything that's Supercoach relevant heading into round two. Traditionally, it'd be a week where not a whole heap happens. Still only seen one game, and we're really waiting for one more bit of data before we really start to get aggressive and move. But due to opening round, we have got six teams on the bubble, and there is already a ton of stuff we've got to discuss. Joining me on this episode as we make our debut Supercoach Strategy Roundtable, I've got fellow co-founder Rids from the Coaches Panel. Mate, nice to have you on this episode. A new look for those watching over on YouTube. The AI avatar's got a little bit of an improved look and feel. I think it's a little bit closer to what you actually look like.
Exactly right, mate. This is bringing back the good old days, yeah, MJ, when we used to do this a little bit more in the print form of the Supercoach world. We've taken it back 10 years now.
Who would have thought, my friend? It's a fascinating week for us to really look at a bunch of different players, a bunch of different strategies. And I feel like straight out of the gate, mate, we've got to talk about our trade priorities this week. As I mentioned right at the top of this episode, so much of our Supercoach side would historically be, at least the way we'd play the game, historically would be wait for one more week of data, get everybody on the bubble, and then we'll make our double trades. But with trade boosts, which we'll talk about in a moment, and six teams on the bubble, maybe not every player from those six teams, but six teams with the accessibility, it does open itself up for us in the Supercoach community now to approach this week very, very different to how we might normally approach the second week of the season.
It's really thrown a new little dynamic, hasn't it? I actually don't mind it. Like, I mean, I know that everyone else is having a bit of a whinge and across all the other formats, but for Supercoach specifically, wowee, what a great dynamic this is.
It's really interesting to me to see how the community approaches their trading plans for this week. Do they jump off this guy that's had a poor first week, that's a cash cow, that doesn't be someone we forecast moving forward, be a viable option? They're not a dead cow yet, but we can start to see them heading towards flatlining. Then we've got a mid-pricer that might not have really popped the way we hoped for one week. And we jumping off, and then we've got those premiums that while we'd hope to hold them for the season, some are a little bit agitated for it. So I think the trade priorities, is it too simple to just say, is it team dependent and coach style dependent, or is there a little bit more nuance to it?
I think there's a little bit more nuance to it this time because we don't have that much data at the moment. We got two games for the guys on the bubble. We got one game. So let's say someone like a Nick Martin, for instance, last round, he scores 63. That's pretty low. That's pretty low to what we would have been expecting for this guy. Like, how big that means? Do people react now on the bubble to jump to someone who's on the bubble? Or, and they're likely going to get burnt, yeah, with Nick Martin next week. So the fact is, this is crazy, yeah? So trade priorities, it's going to be a bit up in the air. The first ones we do have to call out, though, Josh Gibkiss and Zach Reed, which are very popular, like defended rookies. A couple of them were on the bench, like a couple of them were on the field. Like, depends how your team is actually structured up, yeah? Because someone like a Gibkiss had every opportunity to go 60, 70 in Supercoach going forward. So it's just throws a little bit of an extra dynamic. Carlton and Brisbane, mate, being on the bye this round, extra dynamic, yeah? A guy like Jack Carroll, do we go, you know what, we're going to go jump on a Tom Berry this week? Mm. Oh, and then when he has his bye, I'm going to go jump on a Jack Carroll. Like, what are we going to do? We got extra BOP trades, mate. We got 40 now. We might as well be Supercoach AF, yeah? Like, we got 5 boosts. Like, this is crazy, yeah. Mate. Like, yeah. And we're not even thinking about those 3 trades through the mid-season buys. Like, we're going to have a heap of trades up our sleeves here. So however you're going to do it is going to be very creative. Guys that we... I mean, I don't know about you, MJ. If I said to you 2 weeks ago, hey, let's talk about Jesse Hogan, yeah. Would you have been calling me crazy or what?
I'm not crazy, but you're certainly needing a lot to go right, which, granted, it has for him. But who would have thought, like you said, a month out from the season, Hogan, yeah, good fixture, but that's it. Now, all of a sudden, he's a player specifically. There's about half a dozen to a dozen players I want to get your thoughts on towards this episode. So our trade priorities are really different through there. We've got a couple of flatlined cash cows due to injuries. You mentioned a Nick Martin who was a little underwhelming. A Connor Buderick, a lot of people were quite keen on him, thinking, man, I could get one big price movement and then can either give myself the option to move off him and or just create a blue dot for a vice captaincy option for another week. So things are really, really different, let alone something I want to ask you soon about is about kind of forecasting trades and the moves we make this week and next week and the compounding impact around some of these guys. But there's a guy that is only in 6% of Supercoach teams at the moment. Bit over 400,000. We've spoken about him a lot, not just through the 50 most relevant in our preseason strategy episodes. And even when I've had a chance to jump on some of our other, you know, Supercoach friends in the community, their podcasts, I've been pushing hard around Tristan Cherry being the best value option for us this year. 6% of the community are on it. There's a lot that aren't. Brody Grundy was a little underwhelming for us on the weekend after being quite strong the week before against Max Gorn. Is this a fix? Because it is a trade you need to move this week if it's via Grundy. If it's Briggs is the other underwhelming premium we've had over the past 2 weeks, got a ton in opening round, but a little bit of a disappointing score last week. Is Tristan Cherry really one of the top trade priorities for us this week?
I don't think it is this week, mate, because Brody Grundy has a break-even of 57 this week. So no matter what, that first round score is going to be there. Let Brody Grundy come out and see what he does this week, yeah? And if he sucks it again, you're not going to lose money out of it. Then we go jump on to Tristan Cherry next week when he's on the bubble. So this way, then you're getting a double look at Tristan Cherry and you're letting Brody Grundy do what he does best, yeah? Rebound back.
So is that just take the $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, whatever it is that we might make for ourselves this week with Grundy being available to move on? Is that basically what you're saying is get an extra week of data, get on the bubble, and then make the move is probably the better play?
Well, get a little bit more data, yeah? Just try and work it out. Because if I said to you that Brody Grundy's going to outscore Tristan Cherry this week by 30 or 40 points, that's a possibility, yeah? So, I mean, he's playing against Essendon. I know Essendon team's not hasn't been announced. They're saying that Draper's back. Whether they play Draper or Goldstein at the same, like on the same team or not, we don't know at this point in time. But he does have Richmond and West Coast the next two after that. Now, Tristan Cherry, I love him, yeah? But the fact is, we're still a little bit uncertain because he is only 24. He hasn't done this before. He's burnt us previously. Like, we're a little bit of a history there with Tristan, right? Albeit a short history. Someone like Brody Grundy, we've got a longer history with, and he's actually been a proven history with. So why not just see what happens this week? I mean, I've been talking about trade agility elsewhere, like other formats and everything. This is an example of how you can actually sit. I know it's hard not to pull the trigger because Grundy looked ordinary last week, yeah?
Very much so, yeah.
The problem that we got, though, is all the stats right now, Grundy's break-even's 57. Tristan Cherry's only played one game out of that. He's not on the bubble. Yep. I would hate to think that people are going Grundy to Cherry this week and Grundy comes out and goes 120 like he can and Tristan Cherry goes a 50 or a 60, because that's just a waste of a trade at this point in time.
What if that trade was the freeing up of cash? Now, it's not a huge bit of money that you're saving of dropping down from Grundy down to a Cherry. It's not a crazy amount. That's one of the uniquenesses of our super coach, where Cherry sits himself in that price point, is his value undoubtedly, but it's why only 6% of the community are on him. It was like, well, Grundy's so close in proximity. Gorn is huge value. We're confident as a community in what Marshall and English were going to give us. Is that an okay move? Is it worth it for that 50, 60K that you've mentioned we might really only be making?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it myself. Why not just wait an extra week and do it for 100 grand? Like, I mean, if that's what you want to do, yeah, by all means, rage trade Grundy, but just ignore this week, yeah? You can spit on that screen as you trade him out next week, but you can capitalize that cash income that you got to have with that downgrade.
Yeah, so you're going to make about $80,000 on it, $75,000 on that move. So this week, it will be closer, as Rids mentioned, to a six-figure move. In fact, it will be a six-figure move next week. Let's talk about future casting our trades then a little bit. Something we've often talked about in the draft space with Kane, I think is a parallel ideology, and that is the pick you make in a draft, the next pick you make needs to be supported by that pick. I think if we were to run that thought process through to our classic formats of super coaches, the trades we make this week should be indicators and protectors or movers towards the trades we want to make the following week. We'll look through a bunch of options that are worth considering both now and in the future soon. But you mentioned right at the top of this episode, a Jack Carroll's on the bubble this week, and he will be for us for another week. There's a Jared Lyons who, again, around that $250,000 price point, so not a cash cow, but has kind of gone bang, bang for us. And no Will Ashcroft in sight just yet, and was really poor in the first quarter, by the way, really strong in the final three quarters. So we've got these guys. Ollie Dempsey's another who will be on the bubble for us that time next week. Amosimo D'Ambrosio will be on the bubble for us at that point in time. So what are the sort of moves we should be looking from a trade perspective this week, knowing that the historical and traditional move is jump on those bubble guys, get off those guys before their price really falls away, and we'll only have three available trades for us if we were to use one of our five boosts?
It's a tough question, yeah? Because the fact is, it's hard to predict what's going to happen this week. And a lot of the names that you just mentioned, whether it's a Mass or whether it's a Nick Martin, whether it's someone else, okay, we just don't know how this week's going to go yet. So my thing is, I'm old school, yeah? I've been around for a long time now. I like looking at it on the bubble. I like to make those moves with as much data and information as I can. And then that way, then it's trying to mitigate the risk of making a mistake. Because I've been in that situation. How many people have been in that situation with Supercoach? We go trading out someone because of that poor first game. And then they come back and do 120, 130, which is going to sit in their three-price cycle for the next whole three rounds of it, which means the price is going to be absolutely at an escalated rate. Like, it's just not a good feeling watching those guys. On the other hand, though, remember Matt Rowley a couple of years ago? He came out and absolutely ripped it up. And then the next week, he went a 50 or something.
Yeah, I think he got injured or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's just awkward, yeah? When you go too early, it's a real delicate balance. But the person that you named just then that is the most interesting, Jack Carroll, does that mean someone like a Tom Berry, who's got one of the biggest, highest break-evens right now with negatives, is that just mean we can bypass that? Because it doesn't quite feel right, does it, Tom Berry, at the moment? I know he's got a nice break-even of 76, negative 76, but he doesn't have DPP, yeah? He's if yeah. you want to go a Cadman, or if you own a Cadman as well, it's really put in that limitation. Then can you trade into an Oliver Dempsey next week without that DPP? Because we do have heavy DPP at the moment, whether it's Wilson, Lazaro, Windsor. Reed.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot of them. So are you limiting yourself moving forward? And that sort of sucks, because we only just talked about trade agility a minute ago. That's going to make you more rigid, yeah? You're pretty much stuck. You can't go exploring that mid to forward relationship anymore with your trades. It just really, really, yeah, I just don't like it myself. That's me. I know others will go out and just cash it, but that's why I sort of said, is the right move go and bank that money that Berry makes in a week and then jump straight onto a Carroll? I don't know the right answer, but I mean, there could be worse options out there, yeah?
Yeah, I can see a world where by the end of round six, Tom Berry's pushing 300,000 for us. And now that's assuming that he can pop another 80. And last week was, as far as I'm concerned, a unicorn and a season high score from him, but it's done. The only time it would be better for him to have given us that score is this week, as it's then, you know, sits in that 3 week price cycle movement for a longer period of time for us, but still a really good spot. Talk to me about these moves that you mentioned, you alluded to, and we will break into some specific players in a moment. Really disappointed us with some things not going their way. But some smart coaches moved an Elliot Yeo into the midfield, and smart's not to downplay anybody that missed it, but rather those that went, that's a pain point that I'm going to have to deal with in a week. So now that I've got the freedom in unlimited trades period of time before full lockout hit, they were able to adjust to that. People did similar with Grundy at R3. Are the coaches that made those moves, do they have an upper hand on the with their, now they've almost created a pathway for this forecast to really be a bit less limited, or is it pretty net neutral from your perspective?
No, I think it's actually very, it's easy to do. You could be proactive. You forecast what's going to happen. You see a roadblock, okay? You don't want to go that way. So the problem is, it's the defensive options that you can pivot off a Gibkus or a Reed or someone like that. It's not as full. Then there's not as plentiful as the other lines. So something like a Gibkus, if you have a little bit of cash in the bank, potentially you can go Gibkus to Jack Billings by having an Elliot Yeo sitting in your midfield this week. Like, there are options there, yeah? So I just think you hamstrung yourself a little bit if you don't make that move, but I understand why you don't do it, because life gets in the way at times. Like, we're so used to, whether it's you got your parents running around for kids with sporting events on the weekends, or whether you're working or whatever it is, sometimes life just doesn't allow you to do it, yeah? So we just got to go, rightio, it is what it is, and we move on. But for those people that do have that advantage already, and I can tell you now, MJ, that would be a lot, because a lot of people started Nick Daicos with the full intention of having a mid rookie filling in for him when the time came for his buy. So I do think that's actually, like, it's really in play right now. So you've got to really explore. You've got to go out and you've got to work out. But the problem that we have as coaches is, what's the limit? We're used to, you said it a minute ago with Tom Berry, okay? There's a world that he's 300,000 by, say, round five, six.
Five and six, yeah.
Are we really comfortable holding him that long, though? Like, we've got extra trades. That's like the old school thought process. We want to make 150,000 each trade, or so on and so forth. I don't think we do anymore. We don't need to make 150. It might be having that agility and being able to go in and go out and get quicker turnover of cash and reinvest in it quickly on other commodities that are going to go up in price. So it's really interesting how we're going to play this. There's no blueprint, though. That's the whole, this is the cool part, yeah? There's no blueprint to say, this is how you got to do it. You know, years gone by.
The beauty of it.
Yeah, years gone by, we've always had that, oh, you don't trouble, you don't trade when they're not on the bubble, this and that. You make a certain amount of money per trade. You do this, you do that, you trust your premiums. Guess what? That's all changed now. But the fact of the matter is the next four out of the next five rounds are best 18. That's really where it's going to come down to. You do want to still be scoring points. You don't want to just be making cash, yeah?
Yeah, 100%. And that's an interesting thing. So no Carlton players this week, no Brisbane players this week. Zach Williams is far and above the most popular of options for us in Supercoach. And Carroll, you know, certainly not at the same level, but popular enough that coaches might have multiple blue dots through there for us. Historically in Supercoach, when we get to a best 18, it's in the middle of the year and we're just trying to maximize as many dots on the field, which we should all have no problems getting 22 players on field, but we're just trying to maximize our ceiling scoring. However, the challenge we've got with the early buy rounds, as you mentioned, is yes, maximize ceiling for sure, but we're also not wanting to lose cash generation. And so we're going to find ourselves at this interesting point where different teams are structured up in different ways, where next week, for example, Whitfield owners, Green owners, Goulden owners, Flanders owners, for example, they're all losing a premium out of their side, whereas those that didn't start them probably didn't get their good scores just yet, probably won't get the injection of price movement just yet, but they might be able to maximize some point scoring through that. So you mentioned it's this unique year. It's fascinating for me to see where teams kind of settle and lie after round six. And even then, we won't probably get full visibility until the end of the next block of buys to see how people played this first 6 weeks and ultimately what is a right and wrong approach.
And I don't think the rank is going to tell us anything, mate, until what you say, round 12, round 13, round 14, you know, it could even be a little bit later. Like, the fact of the matter is, though, you don't want to drop too many points. Because there's too many smart coaches out there right now. Yeah. You know, you think about it. You got like the JDs of the world, the Selbys of the world. You know, there's too many. We're getting smarter. We're getting better. We're getting more adaptable. We're getting more understanding around what value means and how we can actually build a team balance. And then how do we capitalize on that as we move forward? But the thing is, you still should be after points at the same time. It's going to be an interesting balance. Those boosts, though, what a curveball, yeah? Five boosts, mate. Like, we're talking about we could have 15 trades in the first five rounds, mate, and not even make an impact on those 40 trades. You know, you still got 25 trades after that. Just as long as you do it, and people are going to come out and create different strategies. Like next year, we're going to have a bit more of a blueprint. We're going to be sitting there going, the winner of 2024 Supercoach did it this way. And you know what? Whoever that was, if we go there and we go, we're going to analyze that person. We're going to analyze what they did. We're going to work out how they got that. How did they win that money? You know, how did they win Supercoach? And then you know what's going to happen? A million people are going to do it the same way next year. Going again and going again. And with all these smart coaches out there, there's going to be different strategies, new tweaks. It's going to be a world of how you're going, yeah? So, I mean, one of my mates, like from years gone by, he's playing Supercoach. He's actually thinking about utilizing a couple of these boosts early just to cash in quickly so he can go and jump on those premiums quicker and try and finish his team quicker. Like, it's just, wow, blank canvas. Go draw go paint a painting and do whatever you want, yeah?
Yeah, the beauty is for us in Supercoach, we're at least a little bit ahead of the curve with, well, we don't know how to handle these opening round buys, the teams that played. We have used boosts before, and it does seem that coaches that were successful with recency bias accelerated their team's value. And as you mentioned, got some cash cows off the field, mid prices into premiums, and we're kind of a week or two ahead of where traditionally we would have been because we're a week or two ahead of our trade cadence with there. So is this going to be a different year that coaches that are on the more conservative side, and now I use that word loosely, by the way, as you've mentioned, we could double trade for the next 20 weeks and then we would finally run out of trades in the final 3 weeks. So you've absolutely got to use the trades that are there, but does it pay off? Because teams that run out of trades, we still don't, well, we've got a lot, we still don't lose some of our traditional Supercoach ideologies that we've held, which is points can really be made up quickly at the back end of the year, Rids, with lots of blue and red dots on our benches, injured premium options, limited DPP. While I'm not advocating for a steady and slow approach in Supercoach, there is something to be said that you can make up points really big at the end of the year, not just at the start of the year.
100% you can. So, and people will be playing that strategy, yeah? They're going to be conserving trades and flying home at the end. There's going to be other people that are going to be relying on luck and trying to get a bit of a lead, you know, with five or six rounds to go and trying to hold on. It's just going to come down to, is there... are people going to get lucky in those last month of football? Who is going to be injured? Who isn't going to be injured? Who's going to be suspended? And I mean, there's a 99% chance that James Sicily is the one that's going to be suspended. But the fact of the matter is, okay, that's what the element of luck is in this. You're going to need some to win this Supercoach format of 2024.
You're certainly going to. One last thing we want to talk about before I've got, I think about 8-10 players I want to ask you about before we wrap up the episode is, help me through this idea of the difference between a proactive trade this week and a reactive trade that we could make this week. Carl Amon, I know not a huge volume of the community are on, but there was certainly through the preseason a groundswell of this guy is going to pick up DPP, which I think he will, but he's going to be a top six defender. Nick Martin was probably more noticeable this week, both in an ownership and a scoring split. Not that we're talking about AFL fantasy, but in that format where it's just pure volume and where Supercoach get rewarded for how you use it, just with the sheer number of clangers, he did disappoint people. Well, maybe he's the right sort of person to talk about. You could possibly throw Grundy into the mix of that. Buderick, I don't think he's got high enough ownership, but you could probably put him there. Dawson, I think it's Nick Martin, if you really want
let's
to.
Say,
Nick Martin's
let's
the
go
main
to Nick
one.
Martin. 26%. Yeah.
When is
of
it
teams.
Proactive or reactive?
And that's the delicate balance this week. I would personally, me, I like to sit unless I absolutely hated everything and it just ruined my weekend of watching Nick Martin last week. I would actually sit and just get another piece of data about it. Because, like, the fact is, he does have the role. So it's just his decision-making and his execution by foot that really let him down this week with the clangers and everything else. So,
which is uncharacteristic of what he normally is, too.
Well, it is. But, I mean, the fact is, he did do it, okay? So... I've been focused on AF a lot this year. So Supercoach specifically, I went into Nick Martin because I was thinking exactly what you said a minute ago. We can actually use Nick Martin in round seven, going back into defense, and then he's a play right through to his bye. The fact is, if he keeps pushing 50s, 60s, 70s due to that inefficiency with by foot, I don't think anyone should be holding him after next week. So it all depends on what people's biggest priority is in that team at the moment. Is it getting a Gibkiss off? Do you have too many of a certain type in there? where is Martin sitting in your midfield right now? Is it M4? Is it M5? Is it M6? Who is the other options? Because I can tell you now, mate, going Nick Martin to Riley Bonner this week looks like a masterstroke, yeah? You bank 210 points. You bank 210,000 cash.
Yeah.
And pretty much Bonner, you know, comes out and scores 100 at just shy of 300,000, whereas Nick Martin goes out and absolutely butchers the ball and scores a pretty disappointing 60. So right now, with one sample size of data, that's a no-brainer trade, yeah? But do we feel comfortable making that trade? Because guess what? In 2 weeks' time, Bonner could be sub. Bonner could easily have the 60-point, you know, score against his name, and Martin 120. Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those ones, yeah? So I just think get a little bit more info. Get a little bit more data this week, and then
when you can,
of course you can, yeah. Because Nick Martin, for instance, is only on one game at the moment. So when he plays his second game, then we can react to it.
Yeah, we've got the Bonner. We'll have a second game, and with Jack Sinclair in the side, we'll have the opportunity then to see. Okay, and Ollie Wines, who's at in a similar vein of spot, what does he do after a mid-90s score last week? Does he pop a little bit more midfield time? What else is coming through there? Can I open things up? And like you said, with that trade boost, I really think a lot of coaches should be telegraphing three trades next week, because you've got different options.
You asked me a question a minute ago about a reactive to a proactive. If you're trading Nick Martin, okay, this week, that's fine.
Yep.
Who are you trading him to? Is it a Riley Bonner? Okay, that is reactive.
I agree with that.
If we change Riley Bonner's name to Isaac Heaney, though,
different story.
And that's 10,000 less to Nick Martin. You get 10,000 in your kitty, okay? That's a proactive trade, because in 2 weeks' time, there's going to be a substantial difference in price going Heaney's way to Nick Martin. So that's the difference between reactive to proactive, yeah?
Yeah, it's a good shout. There's a couple of guys I want to ask you about in the next sort of 10 minutes before we wrap up this episode. I don't think there's too many coaches that don't own a Blake Howes with that break even of negative 86, one of the best in the game at the moment. I think a lot of people do have him, maybe not on field, but is this, I know team dependent is always the advice we give, but for the limited coaches panel viewers and listeners that don't have Blake, is this the number one trade priority for the week?
He has to be, because there's a couple of reasons, okay? It's the Zach Reed, it's the Gibkiss problems, okay, with the injuries for a start. So if you don't have Blake Howes, there's every chance you got a Reed or you got a Gibkiss, okay?
Or both, yeah.
Or both, exactly. Who else are you going to go to? Charlie Dean's been dropped out of this week's team, so it's not like we've got a surplus it's Mossimo. Of... Well, that's it. And we wouldn't feel comfortable. Yeah, exactly. So you might as well go straight to Big Howes with the massive negative break even and then go to Mossimo later if you want to go that way, okay? That's the first thing. The second thing is you can actually, if you've got a Yao in your midfield, why not explore Howes as your D6? Because the fact of the matter is we are best 18 for the 4 out of the next 5 rounds. So if he continues scoring the way he is, he might scrape into the bottom of that best 18. If he doesn't score like he has, he's going to drop out. There's nothing lost, nothing gained, but you are making money out of it. So I just think it's a no-brainer trade, that one, because of the lack of options. There's no other ones there in the back line. And the fact is, the best 18 really covers us.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we could probably put this guy in a similar vein. That's next, Matt Roberts at 156,000, average of 72, break even of negative 58. Again, He was good in opening round. He was arguably even better in the preseason with his scoring. Didn't have a great opportunity to score much last week because the entries for Collingwood in that second and third quarter especially were shallow at best and really slingshotted out fast. But for the few coaches that aren't on Matt Roberts, high priority trade in for you too this week?
Well, I think so, because the fact of the matter is, in his next two rounds, he's likely to make 100,000 for you. So yeah. I just think anytime one of these guys comes along and does that, and then you know what happens after the next two rounds? He plays West Coast, mate. So there's every chance he's going to pop another score just before his bye and make you a fair bit of coin.
Yeah, and it's a perfect parachute timeout for him as well to be able to make some of those move options, whether it be a mid-pricer that you're wanting to trade into, a premium that's dropped a little bit. I think it's a good option. We've already alluded to Tom Berry a little bit. An average of 83, certainly inflated by that ton last week, a break-even of negative 75. A buy next week, interesting. Do we want him in 6 weeks? You've already mentioned Ollie Dempsey's, I think, someone that if he drops another 90 like he did last week, then that's going to be super duper interesting. And the Friday night matchup does give us a chance to have a look and see before committing to a Tom Berry. But talk to me two questions about Tom. One, how much money and how important is it to trade into him? And two, what if that trade helps you with other correctional trades you'd like to make this week? Does that feel like he becomes more important to you as a result?
I think it's more about who you're trading out again. Now, James Harms just got suspended for a round. I don't know how highly owned he is, but he might be reasonably owned across the board because he was pretty cheap. Yep. That would bank you 100,000, just over 100,000 straight away, and also have the ability to make another 50, 60,000 this week from up Tom Berry. The problem with Tom Berry is, are we really that sure he's going to score any better than 40 or 50 on any given week? And that's sort of why I'm a bit hesitant on him at the moment. But his break-even's negative 75 right now. If he scores a 52, he makes just under 60,000. So 55, he makes 60,000. That's not the worst. Decent. But the thing is, you're banking that Harms money, okay, as well. Yeah. So you're freeing up a bit of money plus making a bit of money. And then you can have that agility going into his buy and going, do I need to get off him now because he just scored me 20? Or can I hold him another week and make another 50,000 out of it? That's the sort of trade that I would be exploring if I was looking at Tom Berry and I own James Harms.
Yeah, so 10% of teams are Harms owners. You make that 100K plus the extra 50, so 150,000 is made in 1 week. If you've got a Cadman or a Flanders in your team, it's, in essence, is it a problem? No, it just limits you to five on-field options should you be holding on to all of those players. So then there's another guy that arguably you should squeeze into the mix of that. Jesse Hogan, just a touch under 420,000, a negative break-even of 46, negative 46, and an average of 139. He and the Giants have pounded on the goals the past two matches. One of them was against a highly difficult opponent in Collingwood. Historically, no surprise against North Melbourne last week, he destroyed them. This week against West Coast, while they do have some of their more premiership era defenders, they still were given up some points to key position forwards last week, like a Dixon. It's an interesting one, Rids, because he could be $600,000 in 5 weeks' time. He could also, if that Eagles defensive unit really tightens up this week, he could only make 100,000 for us and he's going to miss next week. What's your take on Jesse Hogan as a super coach play?
I think with the extra trades this year, he is absolutely legit, especially with that matchup we've got with West Coast. Okay. So again, it really depends who you're trading out of, but I'd mentioned Nick Martin just recently. Okay. He's 490,000. If you are going to trade out of someone like a Nick Martin, let's say if you own Jai Newcombe, One of those sorts, well, you could do a lot worse than a Jesse Hogan, who I believe is going to pop 100 this week against West Coast, because he's going to have plenty of opportunity to do so, yeah? And that's pretty much 70,000 in 1 week with another big negative break even the week after. I just think this guy could do anything. He does have a history, so caveat aware, okay? Buyer aware, that's the caveat. And I did get that mixed up as well, caveat aware. But the thing is, it's buyer aware, there is a caveat. He's got an injury history. He could hurt you. He's still going to make a lot of money. It's not going to hurt you bad. Rightio?
No, it's just put that into your risk profile as a part of the decision that you make. There's four other guys I want to get your take on. Two are on the bubble this week to go up. Two are on the bubble to go down. It's not everybody that's looking at a Jack Billings. Boy, oh boy, had he not been subbed in the opening round matchup, I think a high portion of the community would jump on. He's just, you know, $40,000 over that sort of cash cow spot that we put Harley Reid in, a single digit break even, 65 average, certainly inflated by that monster score last week. What's your take on Jack and his importance for us?
I think he's very important. He's really at that price point, that is, it's nice. 240,000, that's just lovely, yeah? He's had that massive pop score last week. That's going to stay in his three-round cycle for the whole three rounds. Yeah. He only has to score 70s, and he's going to make pretty much 100,000 in the next 3 weeks. Like, I mean, it's not a terrible outcome either way. But I think I've got a little bit more confidence that he's going to go more than 70s.
But more 85, 90, which is his historical areas for Supercoach.
Exactly. But let's just say he's playing in a better team, yeah? So he's going to have a lot more linkage. He's not going to have that contested style of game, but his delivery by foot, if he can have 10 score involvements like he did last week, his score's going to be good no matter what happens. The only thing is, the only worry I got, there's a lot of really good super coach players in that Melbourne system that could take a lot of weighting away from him at the post of the games when the weightings come in. Guys like Oliver, Petrarca, Gorn, Viney, those types.
No, so it's fair. And Melbourne do share it around in the forward line. Yeah, no, I think that's a fair shout. Is this another one of those lay-down Mazaire picks for us? He's gone 140 over the past 2 weeks. Isaac Heaney, under 500,000. It's rare a player at this price point has a negative break-even. I know there were some in the community that tried to take him on. History would now turn. It's not just hindsight, but all the indicators that you could use were saying that the ownership, the role, the first glance in opening round should say jump on. For those that didn't, is this just take your medicine and trade into him, or is it now there are way too many other priorities that you should be looking for, and unfortunately you've just got to let him go and he's going to head towards 600,000 plus by his buy?
This guy has to be the number one trading priority this week for all of Supercoach, okay? And the reason why is his next three games. It's Essendon at the SCG, Richmond at the MCG, and then West Coast. And then he has his buy. Even if you want to trade into him, and if you don't like the guy, trade out of him at his buy. Like, you just have to get him, mate. You can't say no to a guy that's gone 144 and 136 in that midfield role with the injuries that they have to their mids and the likelihood of him staying in that mid-role for the next 3 weeks of Essendon, Richmond, West Coast. That's suicidal, mate. Beyond kamikaze, yeah?
Oh, look, even in the 2 weeks' time that it's forecast that Adams and Parker might be back, sure, okay, what happens if he plays exclusively forward against West Coast? He's still got the chance of turning up just by kicking four or five goals, given that system. So, I mean, I agree. It could be a nasty one to fade.
Think about what you said, though, MJ. even if he does play forward, if Adams and Parker, guess what? Parker and Adams can play forward. There's no
correct.
There's no guarantee that they're coming straight in after having injuries and a really delayed start to the season and going straight into a midfield and being 100% match fit. Heaney's going to be playing mid, mate. So
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
He's not getting moved out of there.
And why would they bring him back a week early if they've got a bye?
Correct. They've started well. They've already should have an eye towards the back half of the year, and they want these guys cherry ripe for that, and they're not lacking in that midfield as a result to push them through. Gosh, Chad Warner's not even getting high centre bounce opportunities. He's starting off the half forward flank, and you know he's getting about every two or three centre bounce ratio. So to me, I think you're right. You don't need to force that move. Talk to me about Clayton Oliver. I thought he was good on the weekend, by the way, but he's got a real big break even for us, 179. An average under 100, but there's still enough signs that he's going to be fine for us. Where do we start telegraphing and forecasting for this trade-in? Because in 3 or 4 weeks' time, when that fitness kicks into another level, when that just he's not as clumsy with his kicks, boy, oh boy, we could get an absolute bargain here, well under 600,000.
You should be planning to get him after his bye, round 7. His bye's round 6. He then goes into Richmond and then Geelong. Carlton's a little bit tougher, but then he bounces into West Coast and St Kilda the next two. You've got to target to have this guy at round 7.
Yeah, I agree. And interesting for those that didn't start a Nick Dacos, you're probably targeting him through there. Those that didn't start a Jordan Dawson, you're potentially looking at targeting him into him. And then another guy that's got a really high break even for us, the last player I want to talk about before we wrap up the episode, Errol Goulden at 622,000, average in the low 90s, 159 break even. He and Oliver, by the way, both are actually attainable break evens. So there is a world where I say they're going to drop near and under 600,000. There is a world that both of these guys hold their value this week on the bubble, but is he another one of those players? He's a week earlier where he takes his buy round. Is he another one of these guys we should be kind of putting a flag post in the ground and going, right, at round 6, round 7, there's a couple of big premiums I want to get in Errol's in that mix?
I'll tell you what, we're going to be talking about this guy in a different light next week if he goes 120 this week, because he's got Richmond into West Coast the next two after that, and his 77 score drops out of his three-price cycle. Mm-hmm. We're going to be having a different conversation in 1 week's time, mate. So let's just see what he scores.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Newcomb, who was underwhelming, the aim on Martin. They're in about 150, 200K gap there, but Oh boy, there's a couple of very interesting names that you mention in a week. This could get really, really interesting for us. Hey,
let me
mate,
say an this, MJ.
Pleasure having you
wait
on the strategy
table.
Yes.
Think about Jai Newcomb. If I said to you a couple of weeks ago when Goulden was looking great that you would only need to spend $50,000 to get Jai Newcomb on the bubble to Goulden, you would be slapping me silly, yeah?
Yes, I would. There, every chance it's there, and maybe even a little bit less, depending on how that matchup goes. Hey, good shout, mate. Thank you for jumping on this episode, our first ever strategy roundtable. I appreciate you, mate.
Yeah, easy as.
If you want to go and check out this episode, or if you play AFL Fantasy, we've done on this same channel that you're listening and watching back at this, we've done an AFL Fantasy Strategy Roundtable. So you can go and check that out as well. For our Patreons that have sent in some Supercoach related questions in the Patreon portal, you have got a unique podcast from me answering your Supercoach questions. And if you do want to become part of our Patreon supporter group, whether it be to get that additional podcast that drops every single week, some access to some hidden groups, or just a bunch of other tiered rewards, all the details for our Patreon you can find in the description of this video. If you want to get in touch with any of the members of the coaches panel over on Twitter/X, you can. We've put all the links for the panel members in the description of this episode. Hey, good luck as you head into round two of Supercoach. We'll see six teams have some price movements. We'll see a couple of teams not play at all, but it's going to be a fascinating week of Supercoach, and we can't wait to be back with you again this time next week with another strategy roundtable.